Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and we have a caller on the line. 214 area code. Caller, what's up?
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Do you have a question or a comment?
I think I have a solution to the problem that's going on in our country today. I don't know if you're willing to entertain it or not.
Okay, put it forward.
We were guaranteed a Republican form of government, and the group of people who infiltrated this country are manipulating it into a legislative and total democracy, which is my definition of communism. And each and every member of the Congress, the Senate, the judicial, executive, the United Nations, and the Federal Reserve should be charged with treason and conspiracy to destroy this once free Christian Union Republic. And basically, all of our documents, and this is for the Jew that I'm going to offend because I believe he's responsible for all of the murder, the immorality, and the destruction of not only the United States, but other countries as well as Russia, China, Korea, and Vietnam. And each, when this thing is filed against all nine judges in the Supreme Court, they would lose jurisdiction as well because they could not defend themselves once that suit was filed. We would appoint 50 judges from each state and judge whether or not that they could be heard and decide whether or not these people should be charged with treason and put in jail or deported.
Hey, you got a big program there. You got a big program that I don't know how you're going to get this underway, caller. You got a step one. This sounds like a 1,000-mile journey to me, but I'm not sure what your step one is. Well, maybe it was the calling the Reynolds Reveal to begin your political legal action. Hey, I agree with parts of what you are saying. Certainly, the we began as a commercial federal republic, and we are we've moved very far away from that. Any other, what else you got to say? That wraps it up?
Callers drop. There you go.
Okay. Let me introduce my guests who are going to address our audience on this occasion, which is the opening of the National 911 Memorial Museum at the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan. First, we have Dr. Judy Wood, the famous physicist who's author of the book Where Did the Towers Go? And she has got degrees in civil engineering, engineering mechanics, / applied physics, and materials engineering science. And she says, uniquely qualified in the world to produce this, the only true scientific analysis of what happened, what the effects of the destruction of the World Trade Center on 9/11/2001, what happened there. So get it online. You can go to wheredidthetowersgo.com, for example. Dr. Judy Wood, welcome to the Reynolds Reveal.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
It's great that you've come on. And next we have Andrew Johnson, who I call the voice of reason from the UK. He has a website, checktheevidence.com, where you can see a lot of his work, and he delves into a number of subjects, including 9/11, the chemtrails, climate change, and others. And he's done a free ebook I recommend called 9/11, Finding the Truth. He's a software engineer, a higher ed instructor. Welcome, Andrew Johnson, to the show.
Thanks, Morgan, for inviting me back.
And we may be joined later by Eric Larson, the emeritus English professor, novelist, the founder of the Oliver Arts and Open Press, and he's a resident of New York City. I'd like to have him on. And, he's hey, that Wally or Yogi is on the show.
Yeah, Yogi. Yeah. They wanted to be bought off.
Okay, let me open by giving you a little piece of the facts I've gleaned in the last few days. This museum is turning out to be filled or triggering conflict and controversy. It was dedicated on May 15 when President Obama and other officials were present, including Bill Clinton. Of should we say shady characters. Today it opens to the public. It was designed by Michael Arid. They opened the competition years ago, and there were 5,201 competitors. And Michael Arid, while he I guess he's an American citizen, but also an Israeli, and that raises eyebrows in some quarters. Yeah, he's the designer. It costs some $700 million to construct. It's 70 feet below ground. It's going to entail $60 million in annual operating costs, including $10 million for security alone. The exhibits are said to include 23,000 images, 500 hours of video, 10,300 artifacts, some 2,000 oral histories, about the many dead supplied by friends and loved ones. And let's see what else. There were, between the 15th of this month and today, there were over 42,000 first responders and family members of 9/11 victims who visited the museum. One wall, we got to bring this up later. One wall of the museum is, quote, an exposed side of the slurry wall that holds back the Hudson River, and that had remained unbreached during and after September 11, unquote. Important fact that's admitted in the Wikipedia account. Tickets are going to be $24. Michael Bloomberg, the ex-mayor of New York City, argued and encouraged people to, quote, write your congressman for more federal funding so they can lower the price. Oh, boy. And then we have the remains and so on. Dr. Wood, let's have you kick it off. What do we need to say about the official exhibits and what this museum is supposed to be about?
I don't know what the museum is supposed to be about, but the message that you get from the media is that we're supposed to be stirring up controversy. That's the message that's being driven in. For some reason, like all the articles that I've seen are about controversy.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Here's one. The AP story back on May 15th was 9/11 museum mired in conflict set to open.
Yeah, why do they want that to be the message?
I wonder why.
But there's one... As I said, this one article that I found fascinating, like the one you just mentioned about the slurry wall being having survived, and that's the outside wall as well. There's another article I was looking at that being distracted by somebody here that has in the line. Let me see if I can read it. It says a line of they're talking about here's the remains coming in and let's watch, and here's a picture of it. And here's a line of 10 firefighters from the Engine 10, Ladder 10, that saluted it in front of the little firehouse that somehow survived the South Tower collapsing directly across the street.
I read that same account, yes.
Wasn't that fascinating? And then you hear about, again and again, the same types of comments, like, they have to cover that up or explain it away, or you don't want people to realize that.
Okay, so you're suggesting that by pointing out controversy or emphasizing conflict, they're leaving a kind of a muddied impression of the facts here.
Exactly. And something I've learned along my journey through all of this is that, you know, I present evidence that's irrefutable. How do you cover up evidence? It's easy. You refer to it as a theory, and then you surround it with controversy. Controversy is the biggest tool for cover-ups.
Oh, that's a sharp observation. Yeah, I appreciate that being pointed out, because, you know, I'm kind of, that's a third order thing in my thinking, but it's kind of up front, number one in yours. Andrew, what's your initial observation here?
Yeah, I mean, I concur with everything that's been said in that, you know, if you can create controversy, and we've seen this rash of stories, you know, and just to use another of Dr. Wood's expressions, it takes the attention away from what actually happened. So you're then taken away onto, oh, you know, all the victims' families are upset and the firemen, you know, are upset and so on. And I think the other thing which I thought earlier on when I knew we were going to discuss this today was somebody wanted this museum to be made. You know, a project like this, I think, as you mentioned, cost millions of dollars to set up. And that money doesn't come from, you know, from nowhere. It comes from somebody that has a lot of resources and have a clear goal that this was meant to be done. And, for example, you know, we've heard in the past how the first responders have ended up destitute with no health insurance, no living, because of what happened to them on 9/11. Yet, you know, that somehow they've got the money together to produce this so-called museum. I'm not even sure that's the correct description for it. To me as well, the other thing which is perhaps a little bit more, a lot of people don't talk about, is there seems to be some kind of dark ritual going on with this. I mean, exactly what is the idea, if it is indeed true, and they haven't just made this up, what is the idea for bringing back the remains of the victims, the unidentified remains, to the site? To me, that does not make any sense at all.
I can think of one possibility is to put it in one place, so, and then muddle it all up with controversy so that it isn't elsewhere. I saw some people were saying, why can't we have a tomb of the unknown soldier, that type of thing. And that puts attention elsewhere and gives people the opportunity to think about it.
Mm. About it. Expand on that.
Well, if you have a memorial for actually thinking about what happened to the people without being distracted by all this junk, then you start thinking about it. And you might realize some things. But, for example, all this controversy being stirred up like a big, huge storm, as they, you know, people go down into this basement where they have this memorial, they're going to be, you know, clouded. Their vision's going to be clouded. They're not thinking about what happened, as Andrew was pointing out. And, you know, you get the victim remains in there, and that gets covered up too. The fact that, you know, it was never identified who these people were. And so you just kind of like, you know, kill two birds with one stone, so to speak.
Yeah. One thing I saw that was a little more truth-oriented was that they now use the number 1,115 missing people from the World Trade Center on 9/11. And they've got all unidentified remains that ever-improving technology still can't identify, you know, link up with the name of a victim.
And that would really cause people to question.
It does. It does. How could this happen would be the...
at this controversy over here and don't think about that.
You're right.
That's I think, the idea.
Now, what about this? They are naming it a 9/11 Memorial Museum, but What about this idea? I noticed where they're bringing in names and artifacts from the other two sites near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and then Arlington, Northern Virginia. And I noticed in one of the articles, there were one of these panels out by these two pools that are about an acre, and they are where the base of the south and north towers were. There's a panel 68, so that's South Tower, showing the name of Todd Beamer. And it seems like it's out of place, out of time, bringing those in, although they have this umbrella name, 9/11 Memorial Museum. What's your reaction to that?
It's also the names, of the people on that were on the supposed Flight 11 and Flight 175 and Flight 77. They put them all there, but I think it still fits that same theme of covering everything with one fell swoop, just wrap it up in one nice, neat little bow on the top. And they even have truthers, I understand, standing outside with a fake brochure that looks like the real brochure that's about 9/11 propaganda.
That headline. The 9/11 truthers supposedly are protesters or demonstrators out there in front of the museum, and I noticed the Washington Times headline was falsified pamphlets, or some media source called it falsified pamphlets. So is that what it is? It's supposed to be a knockoff of the official pamphlet cover?
Right. But in it, they have, bombs in the building and, thermite or whatever, what their shtick is. But what I see it is the same theme. It's tying it all up with one neat bow on it. So here we have those who are against the official story, and they're lunatics. And see what they do, and so it wraps it all together.
Yeah, these folks can be ignored, right? These conspiracy theories.
Yeah, anybody who questions the official story can be ignored because they're lunatics. They show up at the site of the dead and do
Alex Jones or any of these what I'd call dishonest opponents of the official story, Andrew.
Yeah, Dr. Wood just sent me that story, which was on Village Voice about these, fake brochures. And you can see the pictures, of the cover on the Village Voice articles that have got a picture of this brochure and then a picture of the AE-9/11 truth version. And the immediate question that came to my mind is, well, if this museum's just opened, then surely these brochures, how did they get the pictures for the brochures, and how did AE-9/11 get the picture for the brochure and have it ready to roll, ready to go? This to me seems like that things are being coordinated somehow. I mean, I could, I don't know all the dates involved, so they could have had time to do this. But for example, getting brochures like that printed, I mean, it costs you, a few dollars. It's got to be coordinated and printed. Yeah, and you've got to get it. It takes you a few days to get them printed. So there's something very strange going on here.
The general public wasn't allowed admission until today, as I understand it. Now, first responders and victims' families were allowed between the 15th, when the 15th of May was the formal dedication when dignitaries were there. So, I don't see how they can have this lead on putting out such a brochure.
Right. So, it's clearly a coordinated psychological operation again, with several sort of elements to it. One of the main ones is the controversy. The other is the revulsion caused by this idea, that we've got the victims' remains and then they're having a party next to it, and this sort of thing.
Yes. Now, the party interests me because they had this cocktail party for VIPs last night, or happy hour yesterday. Now, this is widely criticized. It stirred up outrage because this is supposed to be simultaneously a shrine to the victims and their families. And meanwhile, it has this kind of quasi-commercial aspect, and they're they got a gift shop giving, selling, who knows what kind of a bad taste artifact.
Oh, yeah.
So we're speculating, but I'm kind of wondering, did they do this? It's in bad taste to do this cocktail party.
We pulled it off. We got away with it.
I think for the people that did this, obviously this is speculation, but my feeling, having seen this unfolding in the last 2 or 3 days, is that this is part of a ritual of celebration by the people that did it, and they're basically rubbing.
Really, the Illuminati, the NWO crowd, you think, and
well,
New York City.
Crew. I would say is, you know, something like the crew or something like that. We don't really know who was involved, or not specifically what they did. We know that people have been negligent and covered things up, and we name some of those people, of course, that ran Scholars for 9/11 Truth originally, and people that are running Architects and Engineers. We've got the evidence on those people.
And VT.
Yeah, and Veterans Today and so on. They're all part of it, and they seem to be a willing part of it. They seem to have gone beyond, you know, ignorance and just being dumb and all of that. But at a deeper level, this smacks of... the fact that, you know, as I say, bringing these remains, if these remains really are there, back to the site, that is an extremely macabre thing to be doing. And that, you know, if you start to look into these things, I don't really want to speak about them in any great detail, but when you learn about, some of the belief systems of these people that appear to be in these high positions, and why they have all these secret societies and why they keep them secret, you know, there appears to be a tie-in into this. And, another observation that Morgan had made, Morgan Stack, just on Facebook tonight, actually, he pointed out that there was this picture of the, water pools that are on the site now. And from a certain angle, they can look like a bottomless pit. And that again, is a kind of a satanic reference, you know. And when you start to look into the things around the site and the numerology and so on, certainly for me, and I've looked at this enough to say there is something going on with that. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it's certainly a very real aspect of what they're doing, and then directly goes into this memorial museum. And of course, the thing we haven't mentioned up to now is that recently the George Bush Presidential Library was opened, wasn't it? And what's he got in the foyer of that? He's got two of the twisted beams stuck in the middle of the foyer or something, or in one of the areas there. It's an exhibit. Look what I helped to get done.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the pictures were in the press. So that, again, appears to me to be, they're just laying it on really thick, you know. That's the way I see it. I could be, of course, totally wrong, but that's the way that I see it.
Hey, that's very similar to the sixth floor of the book depository, Assassination of John F. Kennedy, where the owner, you know, Byrd, had it on display in his own living room, you know, in the greater Dallas area. The oil man. In other words, yeah, this is, look what I did, you know. I mean, I'm part of it. I'm a main mover in this historic event and making things happen in the right way, meaning my preferred way. Okay, Judy, I interfered with your comment.
I was, thinking of how other things are honored. You know, we have the Vietnam Wall, you know, the people who died, who fought in Vietnam. And, you know, of course, you also have the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. There's these types of memorials that are built, and they're all about memorializing these people, not about, you know, this other stuff surrounding it. Another thing about, yeah.
Well, it's not about the other stuff, just to clarify or have you straighten me out, is Yeah, the other stuff is all about real cause and effect. It's about the evidence and how it really went down, isn't it? I mean, if the people generally understood that instead of being psyoped by nonsense and evil propaganda, there would be a revolution.
Yeah, I think that, like, for example, at this memorial site, having this, you know, right, wrapping up with a nice, neat little bow on it, and then stirring up controversy about the trinket shop, gift shop, and about how much you have to pay to get into it, and all these things to associate with it rather than what happened.
Right.
Well, I want to raise this other point. Andrew raised it about the remains and putting these remains 70 feet. Yeah. Below ground. And here's a comment by the fire department in New York City, Lieutenant Jim McCaffrey. I thought this was an interesting account. He is a brother-in-law of Oriel Palmer, the battalion chief who was on the 78th floor of the South Tower on 9/11. And he basically, I've got the recording available here. He basically said, you know, we've got two small fires, bring up two lines and we'll knock it down. And then minutes later, the whole building dissolved. And Jim McCaffrey, the brother-in-law of Oriel Palmer, said, 70 feet below ground, we never wanted it. And Oriel Palmer's may be part of these remains. We never wanted it, but they never asked our opinion. They, the prime movers behind this memorial museum. Your reaction, Dr. Wood?
Well, yeah, it's like taking the body of a rape murder victim back to where the crime took place and burying them there.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a powerful way to put it. Andrew, what do you say?
Well, I mean, you know, they can sort of, in one sense, morally get away with it because the victims are unidentified, so they don't have a voice, you know. So,
yeah.
But why don't they, for example, I don't know, take them to Central Park, you know, and put them there? Why does it have to be at the World Trade Center site? Or maybe there's another site in New York which is a, I don't know, they've got some kind of symbol of peace or something. You know, or some other park in New York that's within the, you know, 2 or 3 mile radius or something. If they're wanting to connect it with New York, that to me would make more sense rather than putting it actually at the site and then mm-hmm. having a you know, I don't know. I think again this whole idea of creating revulsion. I'm trying not to let that, you know, get inside of me because that's going to distract us away from actually solving and changing the situation where we still have groups in the world that can do this. Ultimately, I want to be focused on trying to change, you know, trying to prevent that sort of thing happening again by encouraging people to think for themselves so that they don't look to these figures of authority, which in many cases are closely tied into these groups with secret interests, you know, and then we want to move away from that. So all this creation of negative energy with these shenanigans, you know, we've got to try and sort of somehow bypass that, but it's extremely difficult to do that.
This thing is laced with contempt for the general public or the lower beings, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's contemptuous.
That's how cover-ups work.
Mm.
And because it repels people from it. All right, leave that in the past. Move on. Don't think about it anymore.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know whether Dr. Larson's going to join us, but he, you know, he was mentioning how he's been, because he lives in New York, and he's obviously sort of, I think, seen this developing. He was mentioning a few things to us that he's, you know, he's kind of abhorrent all, and I can well understand that, you know, when you actually live there. I mean, I'm sort of, you know, 5,000 miles away, so, you know, it's a bit different.
Well, what about putting a memorial right in front of the Pentagon so we can think about what took place right in front of the Pentagon?
Mm.
Right at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we can't have people think about that. We got to divert them elsewhere.
Yeah. You know, perhaps we should have a great big poster in front of the Pentagon with the towers turning to dust and say what really happened. You know, perhaps that.
You know, I visited, let's see, that would have been, I can't remember if it was last summer or the year earlier, but I visited the site in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, where they've got this makeshift tourist. It's not a really a finished product yet, but you go along and read these signboards, and they all give the official story. And I asked one of these park rangers, well, where's the alleged crash site? Is that supposed to be it over there? You know, it's at some distance, but it's near the fringe of the woods. Yes, that's it. You know, it's just a big nothing. Although I was amazed at how concealed that was, and Dr. Wood had a comment to that effect years ago. Ah, we're being ushered off stage, and we will return to discuss the National 9/11 Memorial Museum further on the other side of the break. Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds. We do welcome callers here at the Guerrilla Media Network. The number 218-862-9829. My guests, Andrew Johnson from the UK and Dr. Judy Wood from the USA. We are discussing the public opening of the National 9/11 Memorial Museum in Lower Manhattan. And I'd earlier mentioned the brother-in-law of Oriole Palmer, and he was upset because the unidentified remains are 70 feet below ground. We never wanted it, but they never asked our opinion. Mentioning Oriole Palmer, the battalion chief who got to the 78th floor, I wanted to go listen to that again. And we've got just a 10-second clip when on the morning of 9/11. Let's listen to Oriole Palmer, the battalion chief, up on the 78th floor of the South Tower.
We got two. I saw the pockets of fire. We should be able to knock it down with two lines. Ready, go down. 78th floor. No more 1045 call horns.
Hey, translation. It was two lines. We just got two patches of fire. And minutes later, the entire South Tower dissolved. So, Dr. Wood, what's your observation?
They had no idea what was about to happen.
I had that same thought. I said, this poor guy, I mean, he's doing his job and doing the best. I mean, to have this happen, remember, that was such a reaction generally, wasn't it? Where did the towers go? There we've got a name of a book.
Yep. And you know, why they turned to dust. It was, and this guy had not expected, or he would have said, everybody out now, or, you know, or called the boss and, you know, whatever he'd gotten to that point. He wouldn't have kept climbing the stairs.
These buildings were massively strong, weren't they? As an engineer, what would be your observation about the strength of these buildings?
They would have to be. Not only is there a safety factor involved when you build a building, that is, you know, to take in consideration flaws in the steel and accidental overloading. You build it, like, for example, 2.4 times the load of what it's designed for, is what it's built for, just to take into consideration any unknowns. And then there's another number that's a multiplier of that number. It's the importance factor. And it's the difference of if the building is built in the middle of a cornfield in Iowa versus in southern Manhattan, what would happen if the building tipped over? What's the ramifications? Well, you know, too bad for the corn, but nobody gets killed if the building goes over in a cornfield. Except what was in the building. So it isn't just the building. It's the importance of it not going over. And if the buildings had gone over in southern Manhattan, they'd take out, you know, half of southern Manhattan. It's like also a tornado. In tornado country, you're building a hospital. That's the last thing you can afford to lose. So the importance factor of a hospital is much greater. You know, how important is it to stay there. So you can bet that the World Trade Center was built so that it was nearly impossible to get rid of.
Yeah, and it's some of the most valuable land in the world. It's a financial center, right? Yeah, the World Financial Center across the street, and then around West Street, and then you got Wall Street is a couple blocks away. So the Illuminati or the powers that be didn't want the World Center, hey, with apologies to London, which is an important financial center. They didn't want Wall Street to go down. Well, in fact, they opened pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't look into, what objectives were involved, but what I can look at the evidence of what did happen, which is pretty much was just contained within the buildings of the World Trade Center. So, buildings with a WTC prefix were all that were destroyed that day. Now, they had to also take apart an additional building or two because, it was infected, like Bankers Trust. But even what that article had stated about the 10 and 10 firehouse, it didn't get destroyed right across the street.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Some kind of, precision destruction, wasn't it?
And Building 7 didn't even spill completely across the street over where the post office is. There's still bare sidewalk. There's only three lanes of traffic in that street.
Andrew, your observation.
Well, again, we're now talking about what actually happened, which is what, they don't want us to talk about. And we've seen, I think, as a response to this, because obviously this, the opening of the museum is going to start people thinking about 9/11. So the, whatever you want to call it, the fake truth movement, or, the group that I'd like to call collectively Liars for 9/11 Truth, they've got to produce their own new, renewed sort of trash, really. So we've seen these veterans today reposting stuff about nuclear devices and all this nonsense, which again, we end up getting emails, I think Dr. Wood much more so than myself. Oh, are you sure it wasn't nukes? As if like, we've never heard of this before. And then this has been going on now for years.
Re-exploding the nuke myth. I love that title you used.
Well, this was something I came up with because of, we're getting so many people talking about nukes, I had to re-explode the myth because we'd already written about that in, I think, 2007. And then we had another rerun, I think, in 2009. And then we had another rerun in
2011
or 12 with Jeff Prazier. Who it turns out has a criminal record. He wrote to me and said, "Oh, Andrew, you are an idiot and you are known to the police authorities in your local area as an idiot. I've got this quote on my website."
You're the villain.
How does that refute the evidence?
And I thought, well, why would he write to me that I am known to the police in my local area? I mean, how would he know that? Has he contacted the police in my area? And what it turned out to be, as we found out later, is that it was projection. He was projecting onto me what was actually his situation, in that he was known to the police in his local area, and that's what the problems that he was dealing with. Not the ones.
Well, he had to leave his local area.
I think he eventually did have to, but I'm not exactly sure. So we're getting all this trash being generated by these people that I don't know. Have they got a gun to their head? Are they been doing it for part of a deal with somebody? We just don't know. But it's relentless. This whole museum thing is just going to, as we've already said, without trying to beat it to death, it's going to prevent people from thinking. It's going to close off more and more of their opportunities for thinking. So my only hope is that if indeed people are paying this money to go in and see these exhibits, that they see the twisted metal on the fire truck and they think, well, how the hell did that happen? Just how the hell did that happen? I hope there are at least a few people that are going to go in there and see that. and then come away from it thinking, well, I need to study this more, because clearly what we were told wasn't true.
You know, the whole business, the new Fagan superseding a previous idea, is completely destroyed in pages of Where Did the Towers Go? I did an article, it was something like five facts, falsify five theories of WT destruction. And all of this in other work, Andrews, it doesn't seem to make a dent in very many minds. You know, it's just, it's frustrating. Dr. Wood, your comment.
Yes, there's just, you know, constantly digging stuff up. What I say about, you know, the destruction, you got to first figure out what the evidence is of what happened before you can say what did it. And for some reason, people are, you know, like to jump on to the answer, even if they can't connect to the answer. And when I was teaching, I had part of the contract for taking a test is, and I said and spelled it out in there is, if your work doesn't support your answer, you get a zero on the problem. See, I don't have to go after anybody for cheating. If their work doesn't support their answer, they get a zero. Because yeah, that's all I'm concerned about is that your work support your answer. And so if, you know, they're saying it was this, it was that, they're just throwing out answers, but they have no work to support it.
You know, that reminds me of one of those street videos where we'll call it the 9/11 truther is chanting about thermite, and some mm-hmm. critic comes up and says, "Are you full of it? You know, there's no way." The affirmative character for thermite has no work to support the answer. There's no work shown. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, they can't.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to show what the destructive mechanism was. And what the evidence shows is that it rules out the destructive mechanism as being kinetic energy and the destructive mechanism as being thermal energy. So, what was the destructive mechanism of thermite?
Yeah, well, we're going to meld steel together.
I have queued up here my favorite clip about what was missing on 9/11 for both the thermite story as well as the nukes story.
Okay, let's see if we can play that.
Yeah, that was what was missing.
Yeah,
how many people were blown? Yeah, yeah. You know, nukes produce heat, lots of it. So, you know, where are the people blinded by all that light?
You come to realize is, I think, you know, and this it's something that I don't know. You know, it dawns on you over a period of time is that the world operates on belief systems much more than you realize, and you know, you encourage people to operate in that paradigm. I mean, for example, you know, we all get called conspiracy theorists at one time or another. And this theorist word, I mean, it's a theory implies it's another way, you know, another way of describing a belief. It's like a synonym for belief. A theory is a belief, and everything can be packaged. Everything it, you know, gets packaged into that sort of mindset. And you go back to this character talking about the thermite. It becomes a belief, you know. And if they're asked to re-examine that belief and actually, you know, move away from it and go towards evidence, they can't do it. And they kind of, their brain short circuits because they're not used to operating primarily on an evidential basis. It's a belief system. And you know, I read out on another program we did three or four months ago, about this chap called Ingo Swann, who wrote this book about his experiences in the remote viewing program. And he came to the conclusion that evidence does not matter to people, you know, with these sorts of issues. The evidence just does not matter at all. You can stack up, you know, a mountain of evidence, but if a person is kind of absorbed in this belief then the evidence is just irrelevant to them. They cannot. Well, they just cannot take it.
It becomes a secular religion,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't invoke God, but religious beliefs are not susceptible to evidence, really. I don't think.
And, you know, I was contacted by somebody from the BBC a few weeks ago and going on about rumours and theories. And I said, look, just go and look at the evidence. And I never heard from this person again. You know, they didn't want to, you know.
Well, that's not very interesting and it doesn't stir controversy,
exactly.
Andrew. It doesn't draw viewers or eyeballs. Yeah.
So you know, when you put evidence in front of people, and this is the whole problem that Dr. Wood and I have been facing, a large part of it, the people are now put into this belief system. People operate on beliefs, and then they can do anything. They have a freedom to operate on a belief system about, you know, heart does this, and, you know, and so does that, and it doesn't really matter that their evidence, you know, disproves what they're saying, because they've now broken out of this supposedly, you know, the mainstream. And they can think and believe anything they want, which is fine, you know, but as long as you differentiate between belief and knowledge, which is really the point I'm trying to make, people don't understand the difference between belief and knowledge. They just don't understand it.
And that's...
Well, part of it is that people are lazy, you know. It's easy to express an opinion and tap something out, but it's hard to assemble and study evidence and put in a coherent form as Dr. Wood does.
But
here's my best example of it. You've seen the cover of my book, the cover image of my book. Look at that image after you've read the book and understood what's in the book, and you say, my gosh, how'd the whole world miss it? You look at that picture.
Right in front of your eyes.
Yes, right in front of your face. Yeah. It's just so obvious. Yeah. You don't need any. I found myself responding to someone earlier today who was asking about the thing on Veterans Today about could it be nukes? Could it be nukes? And then they mentioned that Gordon Duff said, well, you need to have the serial number or something similar to that in order to take it to court. So we can't take it to court. So we just forget about what Judy Wood is saying. Well, you don't need to have the serial number. You look at the cover of my book. And
my favorite picture of all the events of 9/11. Yeah.
And the buildings, most of the buildings were turned to dust in midair. So therefore, that is proof that such a technology exists. You know, it's very simple.
Well, let's go back to this comment in Wikipedia that I mentioned earlier and get Dr. Wood and Andrew Johnson's reaction. One wall of the museum is, quote, an exposed side of the slurry wall that holds back the Hudson River and that had remained unbreached during and after September 11th, unquote.
By some strange, we can't explain why. Yeah.
I mean, why is that devastating? In this article, Wikipedia, I think it was the same article, they used the term collapse. The towers collapsed.
Hmm.
They don't see any inconsistency here?
Well, I think there's a hidden kind of inference in that sentence you just read out, because it said, you know, the slurry wall which remained unbreached, or a portion of the slurry wall which remained unbreached, a kind of subconscious interpretation of that is that...
Oh, like it's all that was left.
Yeah, either that's all of it that was left, or it implies that other parts of it were breached, you know, and they just don't mention those parts, which, of course, never happened. So by wording it that way, they're giving an implication that something happened that actually didn't happen.
Without lying.
Yeah,
right.
Actually lying.
Very, very clever. Yes. Yeah, lying, omission, or suggestion implied. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, these things must be written out quite carefully. I don't think that wording, it could be accidental, I suppose, but I'd put some money on that wording was not accidental.
I agree.
No.
And I think, you know, just to expand on that just a little bit, is that perhaps is a measure of, you know, what Dr. Wood has put in her book is having some kind of impact. There is now an undercurrent of awareness that, you know, the towers did not collapse. They did not fall.
Including that Greg Jenkins video that they like to use, where Jenkins is making fun of me for saying most of the buildings turn to dust in midair. That's kind of outliving its usefulness, because it shows that Jenkins was trying to cover that up.
Yep.
I wonder whatever happened. Has he ever showed his face around 9/11 issues before again? I wonder. I haven't heard of anything from him.
He was probably given a desk job after that.
Yeah, he just kind of entered stage right and did his little deal.
Possibly, yeah, but apparently he cropped up again, and we found out he was able to have a 4-year sabbatical, and from his academic studies and play jazz piano, his CV is posted on a website somewhere. And
then he got a postdoc position back with his original advisor.
Yeah, and it also says on his
studies called fusion.
It paid
him apparently.
And also, he in 1997 he had a secret clearance as well. So he was in the right.
Yeah.
We know that he was in the right sort of area to be, scratching somebody's back so that his back would be scratched in return. You know.
Didn't he have some connection with NSA?
Yes.
They sponsored his dissertation research in part.
The NSA did. Yeah.
Well, that's worth mentioning. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But I think that brings up another problem, which, is kind of another theme that's behind what we're saying, is the size of this cover-up. And the number of people that are involved in, some of them perhaps without even realizing it, and these various levels, you have your useful idiots, your fact repeaters who are repeating the wrong facts, and so on. And then, you go right up the scale to the people in the shadows who are orchestrating these and funding these groups, like AE 9/11, all these other groups that we could mention, Scholars for 9/11 Truth. These just don't come out by accident. Somebody is causing these to appear.
Now, is it your impression, that the museum artifacts and the videos, and photos, and the mementos, and on, are all really in support of the official story and no troubling things to the contrary, even though they've got to point out some of the problems. I mean, because of Dr. Wood's book has all this evidence that leads to one and only one conclusion. Is that your impression, or that they are really it's hard to say information I was able to gather today?
Oh, it definitely is reinforcing the official story, but it's also to prevent people from thinking about, now that the shock's over, they look at it and wait a minute. My gosh, why didn't I see that before? That type of thing. And you're getting deeper thought. There is some troubling thing. Real people were killed. And those people deserve to be treated better than they've been treated as well. There's one comment in one of the articles that Patricia Smith found herself looking at her late mother's police shield while touring the museum last week when it opened for victims' families. Now, why doesn't the daughter have that police shield in her own possession?
Yeah, good question.
Amen. Yeah.
And I think, again, we've seen them topping up the psychological operation every so often, because I think, going back perhaps a year or so, we had that piece of aircraft wreckage which was discovered between two buildings, which wasn't a piece of aircraft wreckage. And then before that, we had this mosque that was going to be built, across the street from the World Trade Center or something, and the plans for that, and that would then create a storm. And then before that, I think we had these human remains that were discovered on top of one of the buildings after 8 or 9 years or whatever the lapse time was by then. So they have to keep topping this thing up, to keep people from thinking again about what actually happened. You know, so it's, again, I see this as part of that process as well as everything else we've discussed.
I saw one of these dozens of controversies involved the brochure. They had them available in 10 languages, but not Arabic. And somebody said, you know, their defense was this is the 26th most popular language in the world, which I doubt. I would suspect it would be higher. But, you know, it's this whole business of we love the Muslims, but. And that's part of the undertone is, oh, they did it, they did it.
19 bad guys with box cutters who are Muslims, right?
Yes, you know. You're listening to The Reynolds Reveal. Please rejoin us on the other side of the break for more about the National 9/11 Memorial Museum. Welcome back to The Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host. If you would like to call into the show, the number is 218-862-9829. My guest today, and we are certainly enjoying their analysis, which has led me to another place, on the 9/11 Memorial Museum opening today, are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson from the UK. Dr. Wood wanted to discuss a clip here. If we could play that, and let's see how that goes, and we'll kick off this segment with it.
Very hot. No fire for now, and no smoke, right? No smoke, right?
Of course there's smoke.
Ma'am, you have to stay calm.
There is smoke. I can't breathe.
Okay, you stay calm with me, okay? I understand.
I think there is fire because it's very hot.
Okay.
It's very hot everywhere on the floor.
Okay. I know you don't see it, and I know, but I'm going to document what you say, okay? And it's very hot. We see no fire, but you see smoke, right?
It's very hot. I see any air anymore.
Okay.
All I see is smoke.
Okay, dear. I'm so sorry. Hold on one. Stay calm with me. Stay calm.
Please. Listen.
The call is in. I'm documenting. I'm going to let them. Hold on one second, please.
I'm going to die, aren't I?
No.
I'm going to die.
Ma'am, say your prayers. And we're not going
to die.
We're going to think positive because you got to help each other get off the floor.
Stay calm.
You're doing a good job, ma'am.
It's so hot. I'm burning up.
If you don't, the floor is hot and everything is hot. They're all their deaths. When you go up high, you get too close away from the smoke. Okay, I know you know. Hold on a second. Any third floor, three people trapped.
Okay, Dr. Wood.
Yeah, what I found interesting is if somebody's hot, like, you know, hot tubs have a limit to how long you can stay in them because you physically cannot get out if you get in there too long because your muscles won't work. The body's designed for a certain temperature range, and if you overdo that, the muscles don't work. And so she can't be that hot, especially hyper like that. It's hot, I'm burning up, can't breathe. But she also, I'm trusting that what she is describing is her best way of describing it, what she's experiencing. But she says it's hot everywhere. So she's been doing this long enough that she's been to every square inch of the floor and it's hot everywhere. But the biggest telltale of that is she says, of course there's smoke. I can't see the air anymore. Well, we don't hear her choking. Smoke.
No.
It gets rid of the oxygen. And you can't breathe anymore.
Didn't cough one bit in that clip, did she?
Nope. And
so,
she can't see the air anymore. In other words, the fumes, haze, whatever, particulate. I'm not going to say smoke because we can eliminate that as a possibility because she's breathing fine and, you know, isn't out of oxygen. But the room is filled with dust.
Yes.
The building is turning to dust.
And explain to us again about the active denial system. How does that work?
I'm making it clear. I'm not saying that's what was used, but this is an analogy of, you know, what would cause the same symptoms. It's to break up crowds. they fire microwave beam at a crowd to break it up because people can't stand to feel like they're being cooked. It only cooks like the very top of layer of their skin, but their nerve senses that they're burning up and they want to get out of that. But they're physically not burning up because their brain's still working, they can run.
And it's almost beyond your control, and that is, it's not a well thought out. It's just an impulse. I've got to get
right
away from this.
Yeah, like if your hand is on your stove burner, it's red hot. You don't say, maybe I should take my hand off. No, your
right
hand just goes off.
Yeah.
So she's saying is consistent with that.
Yes. Andrew may have a comment about this.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a number of pieces of evidence like that which seem to suggest that, again, something that wasn't, you know, there may have been real fires in the towers. There seemed to be some that looked like real fires on the outside, but it's very difficult to say, you know, what was going on the inside. And one of the harrowing images that's always stuck in my mind is the lady, you know, I think her name is Edna Cintron, where she's standing in the gap there. And I tend to try
with
and point
pants
out. Yeah. I tend to try and point out to people that if there was this huge conflagration there only, you know, half an hour or three quarters of an hour earlier, I don't know exactly the exact time that picture was taken, how could she be standing there, you know, like that? This heat issue is not perhaps as obvious as it appears at first sight. So you have to consider different options, which I think is what Dr. Wood was saying.
Not quickly jump to conclusions, but
yeah,
to look at, you know, the details of things.
Kind
of
you
like
know,
this, you know, the orange glowing something on a piece of paper, and the paper's not burning. Can the orange glowing thing be glowing because it's hot? Yeah, questions like
you know,
that.
We're doing something that is not recommended by our superiors, namely talking about what really happened and how, and maybe ultimately why and who. But here's what I get from the official presentation, the establishment. And number one, I would call it a pity party. There's all this emphasis on certainly the horrific death suffered some 13 years ago now, nearly. Well, it's understandable, but that's a huge emphasis on showing us their shiny new museum and its content. Secondly, there's this emphasis on solidarity and unity, at least in retrospect, that we're all supposed to, in effect, be marching lockstep to where, I don't know, but it seems to involve lots of loss of liberties at home and wars overseas. And then there's an emphasis on the third item that they call it resilience, the resilience of the American people. But none of these involve what we're doing, which is using our critical faculties. Now, I wanted to ask Andrew, what do you think of my summary here of one, pity, two, solidarity, and then three is resilience? That's self-aspiration, of course.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think those are very key elements of the ongoing psychological operation. And, you know, there is an enemy in our midst. But the enemy is much more wily and much more shrewd than, you know, we have been. Well, they're so good at hiding themselves that most people don't know the enemy is even there. You know, they just can't even begin to comprehend that this enemy really is there and is embedded within all of the main systems.
Yeah.
You know, that society is run with. You know, the banks and the legal system and so on, the academic institutions. You know, we can see examples everywhere where when you challenge them with certain pieces of evidence, they will not speak about them. They will just attack you personally or, you know, in extreme cases, they will kill you, you know. And until people realize properly that this is the sort of mindset that we're up against, we have much less chance of ever equipping ourselves to deal with this enemy.
Yeah, you know what? That triggers a thought to me, and that is, I can't quote it verbatim, but the oath of office for U.S. military officers says something about to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, both foreign and domestic. And you're referring to domestic, I would say, here, at least in the U.S.
Well, it's
and there's, by contrast, here's what I love watching big time sports on television, you know, high def. It's great entertainment. Well, I'm watching the NBA playoffs right now, and then they have these ads, for the United States Navy, the recruiting, the young guys, elves these days. And, the theme is the United States Navy, a global force for good. Going, right. Wait a minute, you Navy officers should be looking about, hey, don't we have some domestic enemy problems? At any rate, that's a couple thoughts triggered. How about you, Dr. Wood?
Oh, you just say it's good, and then that means this is what you're supposed to do, because somebody told you it's good.
Yes.
Yeah, top-down society.
I mean, that's another trend I think we've seen in the last sort of 10, 15 years, because you've mentioned there the advertising for the armed forces in the middle of the, you know, and that is prime-time advertising. That's got to be the most expensive advertising there is on a network, I would have thought, you know, with an event like that, or, you know, in the top 10 of the most expensive advertising you can get. And so the government is paying for that advertising. And we have the same thing here. We have the British Army advertises for, you know, getting recruits, and they've had an ongoing advertising campaign for the last 5 or 10 years. And to me, it's just an indication that it's part of the brainwashing. You know, glorify war, glorify the war memorials. You know, give your life for Queen and country, as we say here. You know. And don't even think about that the Queen is not even English, for heaven's sake. You know, that she's mainly German. You know, and in any case, there's a whole set of evidence that says she's not even entitled to be on the throne of England in the first place. So
Who's your daddy? Right.
Who's your daddy? Yeah, good way
lineage.
Of putting it.
Yeah, the thing that I would like to see put forward is war, a country going to war, is a sign of failure. Why isn't it?
Even some of the shrewd military guys would agree with that. You know, in other words, they're in favor of big, burly muscles that intimidates any potential adversary. So if you don't have to go to war, then it's a sign that you're the big Mamu.
Why can't you just sit down and discuss what the problem is and what are the possible solutions that people can handle? Why you have to go kill?
Because it's about power and money. I mean, people who go into government want to rule. You know, they want to be on the throne or micromanage people. That's a very evil desire, but it's there. People love money and power. No, power over
others. Can't they sit down with the, you know, whatever other organization and say, well, see, we want your turf, and we're gonna, and if you don't give it to us, we're gonna kill you. Why don't they at least give them that choice? Why do they need to do surprise bombings and killings?
Yeah. Why?
I think it's part.
Well,
it's,
you know,
it's
hey, how about the movie Patton? I think of. Now, George, he's that great actor who played Patton in the movie. And there was a clash between the German forces in North Africa and British, I think, but it might have been American as well. And he's looking over the carnage and all the damage around and this battlefield. And he says, God help me, but I love it. I mean, this is the mindset. They're out there, right? They're not just petty criminals. There are mega criminals.
I think, again, it's part of this mentality. You know, I mean, as I've been discussing this, and I may have mentioned this before on the program, that the world is run by psychopaths. You know, I mean, and we all know that, you know, in a solution of things, the scum rises to the top. And that's what happens with these psychopaths. They're able to control and manipulate people to the extent that their mindset gets imposed in advertising, such as what you already mentioned. You know, that might is right, and the only way to, you know, defend countries is with military might and so on. And, you know, when
was it that John Lennon said?
Well, he said lots of things, but he said
He had something, he said something very similar to that about...
John Lennon, in an interview, he said that he didn't know what the people running the world were up to, but, you know, they it was psychopathic, you know, and for being done for psychopathic ends. And, of course, a few years later...
Hey, Andrew, I saw an article on that theme the other day. It had an interesting headline which said that psychopaths succeed.
Yes.
So I went to it, and the psychologists doing these experiments were insistent that psychopathy was a graduated condition. You know, there were degrees of it. It wasn't just a 0-1. And the psychopaths are especially good at concentrating and avoiding distraction, you know, pursuit of ends, and your choice of appropriate means. So I found that pretty amusing. So some of the people that rise to the top would have degrees of psychopathy, just based on this conventional kind of student experimental article, you know.
I think that's
true. Dr. Wood, you were...
Yeah, no, I'm fine.
Okay.
And I think, you know, we're given a very sort of confusing set of moral values now, you know, because it used to be the case that, you know, you got your moral values from religions in the main. Yet, you know, we hear so much talk about, when we hear about religions, it's more about expressing your freedom to believe something than having a moral code. You know, if
exactly.
I could put it like that.
Morality is truly a secular philosophical issue. It's a common sense, and really religions succeeded largely, I would claim, when they advocated these common sense bottom up, you know, the general public, and hooked on to that. Even though as we well know, there's a lot of fanaticism and the mysticism and nonsense in organized religion.
Yes, and I think also it goes back to the point I was making earlier. We hear such a lot now about, oh, you know, you shouldn't criticize any religion. Everyone should be allowed to believe what they like. And, of course, that's absolutely true. But when that again means that the primary sort of thing you're saying with that is that beliefs are the most important thing of all. Do you know? And to me, they're not. Beliefs are not the most important thing of all. In fact, they're, you know, almost for fun. You know, it's the facts and the truth which is more important than beliefs. But we're all the time given these political correctness codes, which essentially behind all of that are encouraging beliefs and not encouraging knowledge. You know,
right. And we're in trouble individually and as a species if, you know, belief is paramount versus reality. You've got to adjust to reality. Now, this business, I can fly as a first grader out the fourth story window. It's not going to work well.
Yes. You know, and I mean, you discover reality by exploring it yourself primarily. Not by being given it by somebody else through a TV set or a newspaper. That's not reality.
Hey, how about the schools? See, the schools are part of the problem. And I don't know the history of U.S. schools that well, and almost very much less on the U.K. model. But somebody was claiming it was our school system is based on the Prussian model. And they gave a name or two. And I said, you know, that makes a certain amount of sense because obedience, you know, and respect for authority is paramount. Now, I can kind of understand that a bit, you know, in terms of order, and you got one teacher and 20 or 30 or 40 students and all that. But, you know, that's part of the PSYOP susceptibility, is that the products of our schools are not really thinkers, which is an individualistic enterprise. So what's your impression of the schools there in the UK, the model and how they operate?
Well, again, that's something since I was at school, we've had this, I think we've got something equivalent in the US now. We have this thing called the national curriculum. And it used to be the case that I think teachers would generally just, you know what the basics of education were in each subject, and they would teach those. And there was some regional variation as well in the country, which is probably a good thing, because as you obviously the same in the US, you have some communities that are more, you know, agrarian, agricultural, and some be more sort of business oriented. So you might want to, you know, sort of have specialisms in those specific communities and not have a national curriculum. So, you know, we've had this standardization of things, you know, and things are now audited and everything's rated, you know, every couple of years and all of this, and you get league tables, and now parents will send their children to certain schools based on league tables, you know, educational league tables, you know, educational results, exam results, basically, what I'm trying to say. And other factors become then less significant.
Yeah, they teach people to take tests.
Yes.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of corruption now, because real money follows test results. So there is fixing. There is cheating of various types that comes public every once in a while.
But you're a spoiler if you admit that, you know, and make the school look bad if you admit that the students are cheating.
Yeah, it's the faculty and the administration that's cheating, is where I'm fighting. Yeah. Now, to go back to the psychopath issue, and the first thing that comes to mind as a case in point would be Madeleine Albright. She's asked by the media, you know, is the death of these half a million infants in Iraq worth it as a consequence of the sanctions, where she's granting it is. And she says, yes, I think it is. I mean, that is a psychopath. Why, you know, why would she be lying? She's saying what she really thinks. That she has no empathy, or very little.
Yes.
She's cold at the core. And these are, you could call them subhuman to her, even though they are human beings.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew, I emailed to you the John Lennon statement. Having a British person read it out, it probably would be better.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll pull that up in a minute. But, yeah, the other thing that came to my mind then, Morgan, was former Prime Minister, Labour Prime Minister, Tony Blair said, God will judge me on Iraq. You know, I mean, what's that supposed to mean?
God what?
God will judge me. God will judge me on Iraq.
Oh,
in other words, the British, the illegal invasion of...
Badly, yeah. If he believes in God.
Yeah, yeah.
A just God.
Yeah, the statement from John Lennon that Dr.
But what he means, Andrew, if I could get your concurrence, I would interpret that mean I've escaped justice on this earth. And you needn't worry about it, because in the hereafter it'll be taken care of, cleaned up. He's really saying, ha, 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 you know, you can't get to me, isn't he?
It was your job to correct me.
And, of course, he was right, because I have a little story that, you know, I met David Shaler in 2005, and he did a talk in Derby, my home city. And at that meeting, he said that he had found out certain things about Tony Blair that he'd done which were illegal, and he could be, you know, put in prison for doing these things. I forget exactly what it was. I think it was to do with Iraq, because David Shaler knew, because he worked for MI5, he knew, you know, certain things about that you could do legally and illegally, you know, certain things illegally, had quite a good knowledge of the law. So he collected this kind of dossier of evidence about Tony Blair's and what he'd done, and he took it to the police, and he said, look, this is what Blair's done, so here's the evidence, now you can go and arrest him. And they basically, you know, said to him, yeah, well, we know, we can see that the evidence you've shown us, we know about this evidence, we've checked it or whatever, but we can't arrest him because there's this matter of discretion. You know.
Yeah, discretionary law enforcement, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, there you go. So that's it. So that,
yeah. And then what happened to David Shaler after that?
Yeah, that was a few years later. So as we know, these things are taken care of. And I think that ties into this statement that John Lennon said, which we're going to read. And it's very short, relatively short. And
yeah, the blue part.
Yeah, and he said, I think that all our society is run by insane people for insane objectives. And I think that's what I sussed when I was 16 and 12, way down the line. But I expressed it differently all through my life. It's the same thing I'm expressing all the time. But now I can put it into that sentence that I think we're being run by maniacs for maniacal ends. You know, if anybody can put on paper what our government and the American government and the Russian, Chinese, what they're all trying to do and what they think they're doing, I'd be very pleased to know what they think they're doing. I think they're all insane, but I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that. That's what is insane about it. Anyway, I think that's exactly right.
You know, to yeah. put a little a bit different spin on it, I have a friend who I interviewed on this show, James Payne, P-A-Y-N-E. He's a brilliant political scientist. He used to be on the faculty at Texas A&M, and now he's an independent scholar up in Standpoint, Idaho. But he did a book. One of his books was on the history of violence. And if you look at the carnage of the 20th century, that's unmatched, but it's been in steady decline. And the attitude toward violence is headed toward a more peaceful, nonviolent direction. And you can argue the numbers are improving. And even with 9/11, I can see the villains saying, you know, this is less than 1 month's highway fatality toll. These are the kind of and these cold monsters would look at it. It's not that big a deal. And look at all we're going to get out of it. Yeah, which they have. I mean, they've succeeded. They've gotten away with it. So they're, in any case, the general culture, for example, the death penalty is under is declining use and hostility. Texas and Virginia are especially big users, but you know, they had an accident in Oklahoma recently that's a scandal in terms of the failure of the drug to work and such and such. So the general culture, I think it's correct to say it's moving against violence and including warfare. What would you say to that, Andrew?
Well, the thought that came into my mind is that people are becoming seemingly more kind of docile mentally. So if we have this process of kind of dumbing everyone down, does that make them more docile and more passive, you know, as well? I mean, that's more a question that I think could be part of, you know, part of the picture that you just outlined.
Dumb and happy and nonviolent, Andrew. We got a couple of factors correlating that maybe aren't we can't be optimistic about dumbing down. Yeah, but that may be associated with less violence.
I think Dr. there could Wood? Be something in that.
Any thought there, Dr. Wood?
Well, what I see is happening to people is the often said slogan, they couldn't think their way out of a wet paper bag. If it's not on their talking points list, it doesn't exist. They can't solve a problem. They don't know how to define a problem and solve it. Now, I've recently been saying that, you know, people now have surpassed, going downward, surpassed the intellect of caveman. Because caveman's life depended on his being able to solve problems.
Yeah. Yeah, with his life and his family's lives at risk every day. Bad decisions, bad outcomes. You're listening to the Reynolds Reveal, and oh my goodness, we're at the end of the show, aren't we? The time just flew by. I thank my guests, Andrew Johnson and Dr. Judy Wood, for our 9/11 discussion based on the event today, the opening to the public of the less than truthful National Memorial 9/11 Museum. Thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Judy.
Thanks.
Oh.